Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Close Up. I'm your co-host, Joe, and this week's Ryan.
Hi, Ryan.
Oh. Actual Ryan.
Oh.
Wouldn't you know it?
It's me.
Now, he did promise you all he'd come
back
for a Vox Machina. Yeah, for a Vox Machina discussion, and he's kept his word to you, so give him a round of applause. The grand return. So.
Oh, I couldn't miss this one.
Yeah. It's one of your favorite shows currently on the air right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, it is.
Speaking of, let's get into our medium shot now and tell me how hyped you were for Legend of Vox Machina Season 3. Full spoilers for this season and first two seasons. And pretty much all of, let's say, Critical Role Campaign 1 up to episode 80. Something, some odd. Basically, anything after the events of this season. Episode like 85 or something.
Yeah.
I don't remember the exact events, but if Tyrion Darrington is showing up, you've gone too far. We're not there yet.
That's true. I've been hyped ever since I first watched the show. Back like 2 years ago, I want to say. No, probably 2023. So yeah, maybe a year and a bit. And I remember being extra hyped for it. And then because by the time I finished the first batch of watching, it was like, oh, the third season is going to come out in a couple months because that's when the other two came out. But there was no news about it and been waiting all year for it and just continuous rewatches of the show. And just all every like month or so, it'd just be Critical Role clips of Campaign 1. I'm like, oh, I can't wait for that to be animated. And So, yeah, as soon as I saw what the actual or when they released the new intro for the season, I was like, that's a cool intro. And then they released a date of when it was actually coming out. I was like, huh. And then I got even more hyped. So, yeah, been hyped ever since the ending of season 2.
Same. And I've been building up my hype by continuing on listening to Campaign 1. I neglected to mention it multiple times in leisure lists over the last year because usually I pick my leisure list picks when I hit a checkpoint of some kind. Oh, I finished a movie or I finished a season of a TV show. But I never find a good place to talk about Critical Role on there. So I've just sort of neglected it. But maybe today's the day I can talk about Campaign 1. I managed to get through pretty well up to where they would adapt Season 3 of the show in Campaign 1. So I'm up to like, and even at this point, I'm, I don't know, on episode 92 or 93 I just finished listening to today. Which, funny enough, has some stuff in it that wasn't even in the season. So, like, I guess very minor spoilers. I already said I wouldn't go beyond, but I am just a little bit. Like, they go to the city of Dis, which was the brass city in the original part where they adapted. But, okay, they chose to do the city of Dis in Vox Machina Season 3 because the brass city is a D&D thing, and they wanted to avoid copyright. And I'm like, okay, the city of Dis, I don't know what that's about. Oh, okay, now I'm listening to Campaign 1, and they actually do go to a city of Dis. So it's not coming from out of nowhere. It's just hasn't happened yet. So they're kind of picking stuff from the future and pulling it back. And that's kind of a big thing this year, which we will go into later, but yeah, so let's get into our close-up now, and the first thing I want to talk about, which I'm sure it'll come up a lot here and there, but I'm judging this season a lot more as an adaptation this year, because the first two seasons came out before I'd even gotten a little bit into Campaign 1. I had no expectations for Vox Machina, except for the show itself. And now I'm realizing that I'm the guy who whines and moans when adaptations don't do the thing I wanted them to do. So I'm having a lot of trouble separating my critic brain for this show specifically, outside of what they did with their original tabletop stream, that's been a challenge for me in watching the season and afterwards as I'm analyzing it. And like you said, you've seen a lot of clips. So are you, do you have sort of that thing too where you're like, oh, well, I wish they'd done this or that?
I, for like two things I want to say, but I can't remember what the second one was. I think for like a couple of them, maybe more of the dramatic moments that happened in the campaign than the, than the actual show. But it's weird because all the clips that I've seen online have either been like the comparison or just like the really funny moments, like the funny improvisation moments, like the bathtub scene or,
classic.
Like even just the hint to Keyleth being a goldfish, I thought was a good way to do that. Like that, I think that part was a good adaptation. It was like, how do we just make this like funny moment that happened in campaign and just give like a nod to it? It's kind of funny though, because I also watched their episode breakdowns from, they did like a stream of like episodes 1 to 6 and then 7 to 12 when those came out on their YouTube channel. And they even talked about how difficult it is to adapt a, like a campaign thing that was 100% improv, but then they also want to make it, they also want to make the show kind of its own thing, but also adapt the story the best they can, but also kind of fine tune it, I think the word is what Travis used.
Well, I mean, they have to, like, just for the chunk they're using, they're basically taking over 100 hours of actual game, like of live gameplay with all the detailing you can throw into that and condensing that 100 hours down to about 4. So a lot's just going to be on the cutting room floor, no matter what you do.
Yeah.
It's really what do we keep?
That's the funny part, too, because, like, what, each session is around 3 to 4 hours or something? Like, that's a whole season.
I'd say most go 4 hours. Some even go 4.5.
Yeah.
Some up to 5, even.
Mm-hmm. So with my very limited knowledge of how the campaign went, and I just know the major moments, I think they did a pretty decent job. Besides the bit, like the major ones that I'm thinking of, which we could get into right away.
Yeah, let's just get into the Bard's Lament. I know that's what we want to talk about because
that's the one I'm thinking of.
I gotta preface this by saying I understand why they did what they did. I've seen some conjecture specifically about the fact that they didn't necessarily know they were going to get renewed for a fourth season. So to end A Bard's Lament would just naturally go where this season ended. We all knew that's about where the season would end. And to have your renewal up in the air and basically end the show with Scanlan flipping everybody off and leaving would be a real downer to end the whole show on if we didn't get a fourth season. So I can understand their perspective of, all right, if this has to be the finale, let's wrap up Thordak, let's wrap up Raishan, let's wrap up Ripley, send everybody off on their own ways with a potential they'll all come back together if we get a fourth season, and just end it on a slight upper with a tease for the cult to come. I understand that. However, I feel like I was teased quite a bit with it early on in the season when Scanlan's ditching the group and everybody, Vex specifically, is losing it with him because she just sees he's abandoning the group. But then Pike comes to his defense and he's like, well, he was going for his, he was trying to find his daughter and he didn't know shit was going to hit the fan the moment he left. That's not, he wasn't trying to abandon you guys. And that kind of just petered out. And then, of course, there was the whole element of his drug addiction that they totally sidestepped. in I think the very first batch when the spice dealer came up to him and want to buy some spice, and Scantlin just sort of brushed him off and he ran away with his little trench coat, and which I suppose was the show trying to tell us very early on, this is not going to go how you expect it to go. That the spice dealer came to him and he outright rejected it. So the, they were kind of doing this weird thing where they were sort of teasing it, but also saying it's not really going to go how you think it's going to go. And then there's what everyone says, where I think even the crew have chimed in on this, and they said Bard's Lament probably would not have happened in the original campaign if Ashley Johnson had been there as Pike more. So the fact that Pike is a larger part of this adaptation, you can see how her care for Scanlan and her just being there changes the flow of the trajectory. So that's the rundown on that from my end.
Right. A part of me does wish we still kind of got that speech just a little bit, just because it's such a great character moment for Scanlan, and it's a great moment for Sam too. And also I think they said, or if I'm recalling correctly, that they still could technically do it in later seasons or whatever. Like, they could still have a blow-up scene, but even that's
what's my mother's name.
With, yeah, I feel like they will. Maybe like a Scanlan versus Vex fight or whatever. Not physical. Maybe. Well, maybe there's a PvP. They did do a PvP between Mighty Nein and Vox Machina campaign. True. So
that doesn't
exist. That'd be hilarious if they did like a special episode, but it would make no sense. Anyway. Yeah, so that was like the only part in terms of the adaptation where I was like, oh, like I hyped myself up for that.
I think
I can't remember
what
the other one was.
The other thing that bothered me, well, a couple things actually, was how they resolved the villains. I thought the Thordak fight was really well done. We'll get more into the specifics of the action later, but in terms of adaptations, I think the Thordak fight was handled very well. But what bothered me was how they handled Raishan and Ripley, because both of those fights in the original campaign were considerably harder. They made Raishan and Ripley threats that, okay, in the original campaign, in the Ripley fight, Percy was killed in that Ripley fight. But in the Raishan fight, I believe Percy and Scanlan died in that fight as well. And actually, I'm blanking. I don't remember if Scanlan died. Yeah, I think they both died in that fight. Like, there were multiple PC deaths during the fight with Raishan.
Right.
Which they sort of glossed over just to make Keyleth the hero. I missed those teamwork. And, you know, in the Ripley fight, once Percy died, all the Vox Machina got together and just beat her to death. It was brutal. It was a great showcase of vengeance for their fallen comrade. But here we get Vex and Vax going off on their own and taking on Ripley and her pirate crew in what was nearly a TPK in the original campaign. Vex and Vax can take on alone. And in the Raishan fight, most of Vox Machina is stuck behind this magical barrier while Keyleth basically 1v1s Raishan. So two of the biggest fights in the campaign with some of the best showcases of teamwork, they sort of took that out just so Percy could have a 1v1 against Ripley and then Vex and Vax later and then Keyleth with Raishan. Like, I understand why you kind of do that for TV. You, like, Keyleth is the one with the vendetta against Raishan, so you want her to have the big moment, but it just, those aspects went a little far for me. Just, I'm like, can the team be a little more involved in these, please, to make it feel more threatening?
Yeah, that makes sense coming from your perspective. I thought I was just more so just shocked on how that Ripley fight ended, to be like really more pissed about it. So coming from a TV perspective, or TV viewing perspective, I liked it. The Raishan fight, I would agree with you, to but I like how they adapted it because, if correct me if I'm wrong, but in that fight in the campaign, that's when Keyleth like feeble-minded her successfully.
Yes, she never, to my recollection, Raishan never actually succeeded in what she was trying to do with Thordak's body. This is the first time we're seeing, I guess, what Matt Mercer had intended to happen if they screwed up even worse that fight.
Yeah.
So that was really cool.
Because so I remember them saying, like, what if she did succeed? What would that fight look like? And then they still gave Keyleth a pretty good moment for her character. So yeah, it's I think definitely for sure there's some critiques in terms of adaptation for this season just because they tackle so many major moments. But for how they did it, I don't think any of it was like disrespect's not the right word, but like I don't think any of it was bad. It was definitely a new take.
And, one of my favorite moments of adaptation was how they handled the Yank and Vorugol battle, because in the original campaign, those are completely separate, sort of like the Vorugol fight, everybody's there, and that was their plan from the very beginning. We're gonna, hey, let's summon a Yank because I think we can do this. And Scanlan was his plan. He was like, I think I can do this if I can pull this off, and then we'll all just slink into the mansion and let them kill each other. But they had them separate, and then they went to the Brass City way later on and had all that happen. So I really like what they did here, where they're like, okay, well, just to condense everything, this group goes to the Brass City, this group goes to fight Vorugol, and then we're going to just have them smushed. The Yank from hell comes and fights Vorugol. I'm like, okay, that's very efficient. You just condensed a whole lot of story in a very short time package, and I respect that. You managed to get the moments in there and make it make sense in this new context.
Yeah. I loved seeing all the major fights. All the major fights were great, especially that Yank Vorugol. Is that his name? I don't remember. That was Ice awesome. Dragon Boy. I thought that was great. I don't know if you recognize this, but they threw in a Cold Stone. They threw in a WWE wrestling move. It was what is it called? It's the Steve Austin move, like the Cold Stone Stunner, I think it is. It's really funny. Stone Cold Steve Austin. I've never seen that. Yeah. They threw that in. I thought that was great.
Nice.
I really love the Thordak fight, especially, and I'm a little biased because Vax is my favorite character. So when he like screams his name and does the killing blow, very anime, I will say, but it was just beautifully well done. So cinematic. And I think I remember at the end of that episode being like, fuck, there's three more episodes. Like, this isn't the end.
Yes.
I thought that was pretty funny. Which it was kind of weird because like I looking back on it, the Raishan fight was cool. I liked it when she put her soul into Thordak's body. But not that I was tapped out. I think I was just like coming. It was like a come down from just the height of the season. And you're like, oh, my God, there's more fighting. Not much of a like critique. It was just more so just my brain being like, oh, my God. Like, not don't wrap it up, but like I want to see more every day. But yeah.
Yeah. When did they kill Raishan? They killed Raishan before they revived Percy, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, because I thought that was one of my favorite episodes when they revived Percy. They handled that ritual very well, and it was smart to keep the ritual but put it far later on in the season than it would have been during the original campaign. Because all these changes that they've made in the course of this adaptation made me seriously consider for a solid week or two that they might actually kill off Percival. I'm like, oh, there's, it's like, okay, he's dead. Pfft, whatever. I know they do that ritual thing right after in the, oh, they're burying him. There's a procession. oh, they're doing the Thordak fight without him? Oh, no. Oh, my. I think this might be it. And then there was a part of me that was nearly hoping that was it for him. Just to be like, death matters in this universe. You can throw a curveball. Because I don't really know much about Critical Role lore beyond this. I don't know if Percy is that important to anything specifically going forward. I just know that in terms of this show, now this is me finally talking about the show on its own merits here, but in terms of this show, Legend of Vox Machina, his arc felt pretty final to me, because all of season one was him dealing with his vengeance and becoming a better person after he's sworn off his vengeance. He got to have his redemption. He fell in love with Vex'ahlia. He set his sister up to run Whitestone pretty well without him. He declared his love for Vex. He nearly stopped Ripley from getting all the weapons that they invented out into the world. That was sort of his final thing, was like, I'm doing the heroic sacrifice to try and stop the monstrosity I made from getting out into the world. And he made his heroic sacrifice. He delayed it long enough for Vox Machina to clean it all up entirely. And he made peace with her. He swore off vengeance, and he was going to... He extended his hand to Ripley right at the very end. That's his arc coming full circle. So if he died right there, and that would have been the very end of it, I would have been sad, of course, but I also felt it was a fitting finale if he did have to end there.
Yeah. Listen, I don't like main character deaths, but
yeah.
How they did it, how it would have impacted the story later on for all the characters. And I would agree if that's where his arc had ended. Pretty good. Mm-hmm. Pretty good arc. I just would have felt bad for Taliesin. I know he voices other characters in the show, like small roles.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought how they did the ritual, because they talked about that too, how in the game it's just a spell that someone casts and then they're back and everything's fine. But in a show where stakes matter, the whole ritual scene where it's just, you know, Percy is being stuck in the Orthax's, like, control, and how they did that, I thought was
beautiful.
Was beautifully well done.
He's still on
the
anvil.
That was kind of a shock to me. After, like, that was the big twist I never saw coming, even with all the promotion. From the first episode of the season, was Ripley has Orthax. I did not know that going into the campaign. So I was just like, what? What do you mean? Like, it did not make sense to me.
Season one, coming back around.
No, it made sense, but I was like, I thought it was genius how they did that.
Yeah. I do love, like you said, going back to his prison, I love seeing he's constantly banging away on the anvil still. He's just in that constant state of his worst self of got the horse blinders on. It's single-minded devotion to vengeance and the pepper box right in front of him that he's building. And it takes the combined effort to drag him back out of that. And back to his family, back to his best self. Pretty beautiful moment all around the revival of Percy.
Yeah. The way they did it, it was a very awesome way to do it in kind of this epic story. To like just like going after Percy's soul, and that Orthax is still there. That's funny, because I think after his death, I didn't accept it. So when I rewatched it, I remember seeing Ripley's gun on the ground, and then it lit up. So even I was like, they're hinting that something. Hmm. This ain't fully done. And then the next episode, I completely forgot about it because there was a funeral. And I was like, oh, well, he's done. He's dead.
This is what we're going with?
We're doing this? Is everybody just going to die?
I think the other thing that made it seem like they were nearly going to was that they killed Kashaw. And in the original campaign, Kashaw did not die there. I don't even know if he does die. I'm not there.
Yeah, he doesn't. I'm pretty sure he does not die. And that was kind of an eerie moment because you see him stand up and then the world goes dark and he looks at his mangled corpse and then he sees the Matron of Ravens. Zara. I was like, that's creepy. I didn't like that at all.
Zara's crying about his body. No, Cash.
And Vax sees him too, which is...
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I also thought it was pretty wild at the end there that he sold his soul to the Matron of Ravens to get Percy back. That's a pretty cool consequence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's so funny.
I heard someone described the end of season two as like, oh, they're so worried because Vax is going to die. How do we stop it? And then the end of season three is, oh, no, Vax is going to die. How do we stop it? It's almost kind of like the same... same thing, but in totally different context. But yeah, I liked that decision for him because he sees how much pain his sister's in, and he's just had this new. He's finally accepted his love for Keyleth. He's like, well, I can't go through with this. There's got to be a way to get Percy back, and he's willing to sacrifice himself later down the line for his sister's happiness. Which that's Vax for you right there. He would rather have her live happy than him not have her, if that makes sense. I thought it was a great moment for him. I have been hyped for Keyleth and Vax to get together since the beginning of season one. And they threw it in the promotional trailer of them kissing. I was like, and the way they did it this season was actually pretty good. And how Vax is afraid to be with her. Because he sees the future and everyone's going to die. But I loved Keyleth this season too. I loved how she stands her ground more. She becomes more confident. Keyleth, so you don't think I know everybody's going to die?
Keyleth has had the most complete arc out of every character. In terms of where she was at the start of season one as a person versus the end of season three, she's very, very different. She's still
very different.
The awkward one and has trouble asserting herself, but especially by the end when she goes through that whole ritual with the Earth tribe, she stands her ground solo against the council and asserts herself as the future leader everyone expects her to be. She's finally becoming that person that she's supposed to become on her Aramente.
I have one animation gripe with this show. Just one. And I do think it's a continuity thing. So, season two, Keyleth does her fire trials, comes out as the fire elemental, and then gets a new wardrobe, right? She's all red now.
All right.
Does that this season in the Earth trial, she's still wearing the same outfit. I don't like that. I don't know why. I was expecting a new color theory with her or whatever, a new outfit, and it's the same one. It's fine. If she likes that look, go for it. But I don't know. Maybe I was expecting, because what in the campaign, she's got like this cape that's all leaves and it's like starts green and then it ends in like a fall color. I don't know. Maybe that's Avatar Keyleth, like full Aramente thing. But yeah, I thought that was a funny gripe. She like, it was such a great episode for her in moment. And then she came out of it. And then I was like, oh, it took me right out of it for some reason. But no, yeah, that was great. I loved how she, it's funny because the cast described her calling to the other members. They called it her Skyping when she's talking to them through the trees.
Right, right. That was a good moment when everyone's kind of huddling over Scanlan's body and then just the tree shows up and it's Keyleth.
What the fuck is that?
Yeah.
So good. Mm-hmm.
So going back to what we were saying before about Vax and Keyleth and them finally getting together, I'd argue the main theme of this season is love. Because Keyleth and Vax had their thing, and then Vex and Percy had their thing, and Scanlan and Kaylee as well, the father-daughter bond as well. You could even argue the love theme is perhaps tied to, I mean, maybe this is more Faith, but Pike and her god, she's having problems there. But there's, yeah, love seems to be the permeating thing for this season. People running away from it, people trying to embrace it, people kind of putting their loved ones at arm's length when they should be bringing them in, and all the consequences that come from pushing your loved ones away. Because yeah, Keyleth spends most of this season pissed off at Vax because he's not, he's like, oh, no, I care for you. And then he like ignores her the whole time with Ryshawn, or he tries to play devil's advocate, even when she really hated that. And then Vex is like, no, I'm not ready to say I love you, Percy, because I don't really know how this changes. I feel like I am I'm a burden who messes up people's lives, so I want to keep you at arm's length for me. Scanlan just falling flat on his ass with his daughter all the time. Like when he got drunk the whole time when they were in Uncarell. That was very embarrassing, but yeah, lots of moments like that.
Yeah, I agree. Big theme for this show was love, and also I, not to say that the show hasn't been adult, but very like adult themes in terms of love and accepting it, and not complex, but just like stuff that nobody really talks about in day to day life, and how difficult it can be, and so I found that very interesting. It was very entertaining, rage inducing sometimes, but very entertaining.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I thought it was all done well.
I thought one of the saddest moments was when they scry on Kaylee and she goes to that one guy at the bar thinking it's Scanlan and then is disappointed when she sees it's not.
Yeah.
And then Scanlan starts breaking down crying because he feels like a failure and Pike's comforting him there. That's one of the sweetest moments of the whole season.
Yeah, very sweet
moment of vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I also love the sorry, you go.
No, I was just saying it's all very well done, especially the Scanlan stuff and how he's like trying to be more mature just in his life for his daughter, and he still slips up now and then, and he was definitely given a lot more epic moments this season too. But yeah, you were saying?
Well, I was saying in terms of an editing moment, which helps the theme shine through, I really liked that scene where Vex and Percy consummate their love at the same time Keyleth and Vax are breaking up. I like the dichotomy there. They're very happy in this room, and they're very miserable. Vax is getting shut out while Percy is getting let in.
Yeah, it's very well done. I think the writing and the directing of the show is top-notch. And how everything is executed is well done to a level of, like, a live-action show, if, you know, that makes sense. Like, every frame is thought out, and every writing moment is thought out, and it's done perfectly. And yeah, that dichotomy and that duality of that scene is both, it's like you're cheering but also like, oh no, at the same time for two couples.
Yes.
Yeah,
one of my favorite things you were saying,
because here's the one fan moment. I saw Percy holding the bottle of courage, and I was like, oh my god, are they gonna do it, are they doing the scene? And then she reveals that she's fully naked.
Yep.
Open the door. Yeah. I love the little fan moments that they do. Like all the callbacks to the campaign.
The bathtub scene as well.
Bathtub scene's brilliant. Seriously though, how fucking long did she hold her breath for? That's crazy.
Quite a while.
That's almost Tom Cruise level.
Yeah. I just love how Vax casually gets into the bath with Percy, and it's such a funny scene.
Yeah. It's a great scene.
Oh, let's see. What else was I going to say? I had a thing. Oh, yeah. You were talking about how much is packed into every frame of the animation. I noticed that, especially during the action scenes where multiple things are happening, they don't just show, usually they don't just show one character having a badass moment. It's like, no, multiple people are on screen at the same time and they're both doing their thing, or somebody's reacting to something. Like, multiple things are happening in each frame, which makes the fights feel more kinetic. Or not even just the fights, even just elsewhere, like background characters or background gags, or like things are always happening, not just in the foreground. And that's part of the that's probably one reason why they're like, maybe that feels so good to me, because when you're listening to the campaign into a turn-based game like D&D, it's like, okay, well, you just took 5 minutes to describe what you do, and then we're going on to the next person. But when you're going down to animation, these battles that take 4 hours listening to them, it's like, oh, no, all these characters are actually moving at the same time. So that cuts down a lot. It's efficiency, which I appreciate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You get to see what it actually look like.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed so much of the action this season. I don't know why, but I thought that they were going to spend time in the hell and in the hell plane longer, which I didn't want. I want to preface this because I think their main trailer focused so much of them going to hell. And I was like, is this just going to be like a one, like one dimension season in terms of like where we are? So I'm glad that didn't happen, but I loved how everything was done in terms of the action, and especially for an animation show, like that's given a lot of effort and time and what's the term, pencil mileage to all these different side characters and that do all this stuff. And it was all beautifully well done. I never once thought that or during an action scene it was boring. I thought everything was very well done, especially the Orthax fight. Thordak. Wait. Whatever his name is. Big dragon.
Thordak.
Yeah.
The only one I felt was a little out of place. I feel like the action was pretty organic to the story 95% of the time. But the only one I thought was like, okay, well, I don't know why this is really in here. It's when Vax was chasing that class member when they were going after Ripley. They were tailing that guy on the pier or whatever, and I'm like, okay, I don't really see the use for this. It never really paid off, I felt. Like, does there have to be an action scene here, or do you just need an action scene this episode, you know?
Oh, yeah, that was in the, what was it, episode 10 or something like that?
It was near the end.
That was a little strange. Yeah, I think episode 10 was the only one that I felt was, not bad, but I guess, like, lackluster. Like, I felt every time watching an episode, this season particularly, it kept going up, 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 and then it dipped a little, and then up a bit more. I don't know. Yeah. There's very much the, I think that's just because of how episode 9 ended with, like, all the characters coming together that we've known for the past 3 seasons to fight the big fight. And then there was
personally
another batch of episodes. But
I think personally, not even the fights, but the most riveted I was in a confrontation this year was Pike's card game with the demon.
It was very well done.
That was, most of the episode was just Pike playing a card game, but it was fascinating to see this guy break down her faith step by step to basically be like, okay, but I've dealt with the gods before, and are they really who you think they are? And just breaking her down step by step. It was very well done.
Mm-hmm. I thought that episode was going to drag out or something as it started, but the dialogue itself, I think, was amazing. It's just like a battle of the wits between between Pike and Xerxes, but also it's like a battle of fates at the same time.
Yeah.
And I really like how this season they focused on certain people, certain characters, like character arcs, and changed them a little bit. Specifically Pike's, I just realized how in season one, her whole, like her entire or character arc where she left the group for a little bit was to rediscover her faith, or, you know, is she going to be super faithful to the Everlight or be faithful to her friends? And she's like, well, I choose both. And then later on this season where the Everlight basically abandons her in hell, she's just like, well, I'm kind of by myself here. And then that's what's holding her back from using the plate. And then she's just like, well, if you're not going to help me, I'll just fucking do it myself. And just overcoming her want and need for thinking that she can't survive without the Everlight.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty well done.
Will she rediscover her faith, or will she be going it alone? Who's to say? Vax also had problems with faith, with religious faith this season as well. Especially towards the end when the Matron of Ravens is basically saying, it's your job to preserve the gateway between life and death, and bringing your friend back is crossing a line here. Something has to give. So he gave himself up instead. But so Vax is weird because he maintains his faith. Like, he is still a servant of the Matron of Ravens, but he often fights back with her. He doesn't just follow her blindly.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he's kind of got, he still has his own code and his own morals when just dealing with the Matron, which I think is good. You know, it's better than just him being like completely, you know, faithful to her, but he's still like, well, this is my friend. I need him to survive. Why are you keeping him?
Now, this all brings me to one of my greatest disappointments with the season is Grog. I feel like he's the only one who got totally shafted. He got nothing to do this year. All he had to be was the comic relief. And even then, I thought that was a little overwrought this year. I'm like, Grog isn't like, they pull a Drax with him this year. Where I'm like, where was your new, like, you had more nuance in past seasons. This year you're just the funny idiot guy and muscle.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt bad for him, especially after that, you know, the Herd of Storms episode from season two.
Yeah.
I thought that was such a great story for him and his story arc in season two about him finding his strength again. And it's weird. It's like, okay, they have to focus on other characters, but he was the only one that I felt was like actually pushed aside. Completely. Or others, yeah, definitely had their
even
spot.
Kima and Allura got more than he did.
Yeah, that's true. They got a whole flashback.
Yeah.
Yeah, he still had like some good moments, like good action scenes and pretty amazing lines, but even then, he was kind of pushed aside. He was given more smart moments, though. So I'll give them that, where he's kind of solving the problem with everybody else, but then they just kind of throw in a joke where it's like, yeah, whatever. But yeah, so yeah, I agree with you there. Sad he was a little thrown aside a bit, but he did have some pretty funny lines. So.
For sure.
There's that.
Another problem I had with this season was its pacing. Now, once again, maybe this is just another problem I have with the adaptation of it, because I know they're condensing 100 plus hours down to 4 hours, and I've consumed all of it, but to see all of this within that 4 hour period, I think especially in the first half before Percy died, I felt like it slowed down a little bit later to a manageable level, but in the first half I'm like, holy hell, they're blazing through things right now. Can we chill? I feel like we haven't had a moment to rest. And think, I'm like, sometimes I watch things at a 1.25 speed, and I'm like, oh, mom, maybe it just feels so fast because I have it on a higher speed. Oh, I don't have that on okay, got it. It's just this fast. It's breakneck speed this year. I think a lot to its detriment. Yeah.
I definitely agree with you a little bit because I didn't think that they would... Spoiler alert, I didn't think they'd kill all of the Conclave this season.
Yeah.
So that part was a little bit fascinating to me. And like, I know they have other villains in the Vox Machina campaign that they would get to. And they teased a little bit at the end. But yeah, it did feel a little bit fast. Even just watching the show. I mean, it was paced well in the show wise, but I could tell that they were going through like months and months worth of like campaign episodes just in this season alone.
The first two seasons,
they felt very much like those were like day to day issues that they were having with like the Durolos and then, with the Briarwoods and then the, and then a little bit of the Conclave in season two. But then it was just like, what was it? Episode five, they got rid of Vorgal. And then Thordak was like episode nine. And then Raishan was the final episode. So that part was a little bit kind of shocking. But it also, again, they didn't know if they were getting a fourth season. So it did feel like a little bit rushed, but how they did, I guess I believe it, because look, they already have most of the vestiges. They got like one more and then they were good to go. So
which was hilarious. I love that moment in Scanlan's chateau when Vax basically was like, how many more of these things do we need to get before we feel like we're ready?
Yeah, Chateau Short Halt, what a good song.
Yeah, that was one of the best parts of it. They adapted the chateau very well. I also really like,
very funny
actually, I love most of their adaptations for the locales. I loved Anquarel was perfect, Draconia was cool, so was the chateau. I didn't really like the city of Dis though. I felt that was a little bit like too generic hell, but everything else I was thoroughly impressed by for production design purposes.
Yeah, everything looked beautiful. I loved the music as well. I think the music was really well done. Very much felt like it was on the epic scale of everything. I was going to say something about the chateau, and I don't even remember it. Oh, yeah, the key. I liked the little nod to, like, after when they first beat the dragon in season one, the first one. Vex finds a key, and then we don't know General what Krieg. That key's for when Scanlan takes it until... seasons later. I was like, oh yeah. So that was a cool callback. I like when she's calling him out, but like Scanlan's just dancing. He doesn't really care how upset she is.
And everything is chicken. That's the only food in the chateau.
Yeah. I mean, as someone who works where I work, you get sick of chicken pretty fast.
What are the options there again?
Chicken, garlic bread, corn, and there's a veggie meal. Don't ask me what's in the veggie meal. I think it's like rice and some sort of soup base.
Got it.
And alcohol, if you count that as a guest, but we don't get any.
Too bad.
That's okay.
So going back to the songs, this is like a multiple in one point, but I really love the Ruby of the Sea song. Sung by, Matt Mercer as Dr. Dranzel. But the multifaceted point here is that I enjoy that despite not knowing much of Critical Role lore, that they are using future plot points and setting them up already. Like, I know Ruby of the Sea is a... Like, from what little I know, that's a song about a major NPC in Campaign 2. I think one of the mothers, Jester's mother. And I don't know how far Mighty Nein is set after Vox Machina, but I'm like, yeah, well, I suppose they think the Ruby of the Sea would be alive and doing her thing and this time, and there'd be people telling tales of her. Same thing with Xerxes. He wasn't in the original campaign.
Yeah, he's a calamity, I believe.
And that, like, campaign one was done, you know, 2016, 2017. I don't think Calamity was done till like 2022, something like really far down. So they're pulling lore elements from, I think, even campaign three. I've heard them talk about how, the current campaign they're running, campaign three, they're still creating new elements of the world that they're throwing back into the Legend of Vox Machina. Stuff they've expanded after years of building out Exandria, that they're like, oh, how about we just make Legend of Vox Machina more fleshed out to begin with? Just show all these things existing simultaneously, or foreshadow them for future animation projects. So I really like that aspect. They're not shackling themselves to campaign one. They're bringing in the entire Critical Role world into this thing.
Yeah.
Make it feel alive.
Yeah, it's brilliant how they do it. It's like little hints here and there for like the super fans to know. Like, I think there's even been some either Mighty Nein or Bell's Hells characters like in the background that you can see in certain shots too.
Oh yeah.
So it's just all brilliant how like this cast and this creative team that is Critical Role, like they've done like over decades of voice acting work and story work. So they all are just have brilliant minds on how to make everything just come together really well and not have anything feel forced, which is harder to do than you would think. Cause you want to do like callbacks and you want to, you know, do a nod to the fans, but you don't want it to feel forced as well. Mm. You want it to be like a fun nod, I think a fun one. It is kind of a funny one to bring up, but the goldfish nod to Keyleth, but her transforming into it like during a song and Chateau Shorthalt, like into a pool, everybody's jumping in, like that's funny. I love the show. I love how smart the writing and the characters are, and how every character feels like they are useful to the story and to the group. Yes. I love how even some of the villains, as hateful they can be, they feel smart as well. They don't feel like purely evil. They definitely have their own motivations. Rashawn's the most complex is probably
Ripley too.
Anna Ripley to me.
Yep. She's awesome.
Yeah, because she is from the lower class of the world. She doesn't have any magical powers. All she has is her intellect. So she wants to be able to, you know, have the people who are just like her defend themselves because her home was raided and destroyed, which I also think those people are from like campaign two or three. Like that's also something a call like that. Back or something.
There's a character in there who's supposed to show up later or something like that.
Yeah. But even then, but like what makes her a villain is that she's doing the deal with the devil, right? So it's all done very well and high entertainment. I don't know why this show hasn't gotten the praise that it has in terms of awards, because I think it should win everything, but I don't really know how animation awards work.
I mean, Rashawn's the same thing. She's really only doing what she's doing because she's looking for a cure for herself. She got cursed by the Ashari tribes, and Keyleth only finds that out later. She's like, oh, wait, we're the ones that cursed her? Ooh, okay. Thordak is really the only one who's like, nah, I'm just trying to world dominate here. But I'm going to be cool doing it.
I mean, he's just, you know, he's just trying to make some babies. Few thousand at a time.
Yep. Which, once again, going back to adaptations, insane. Is something that I appreciated, because you actually get to see the babies wreck house a little, Whitestone specifically. In the original campaign, Whitestone got away unscathed, and they're like, nah, we're going to raise it. Okay. That's a choice I can get behind, because Thordak's babies basically did nothing in the original campaign. Vox Machina nipped that in the bud before it was a problem.
Wow.
So
That's good. More stakes. More stakes.
For sure.
I have no idea what's going to happen in season four. Like, I have no idea because, like, I know, like, this is the point that I know, like, up until, like, where they've ended in the campaign. This is the stuff I know. And then I know what the end fight is and the stuff that happens, like, the very last Vox Machina episode. I have no idea what happens in between. So I'm very curious to see what happens.
I know who the final villain is supposed to be. I know.
Yes.
I know there's some shenanigans with the deck of many things.
That's true. Here's my thing with the final villain. I'm not going to say who it is, but is that technically copyright?
That's why I feel like they're being very vague in that cliffhanger, because I don't think they're going to use the villain they use. They're going to do like whatever Matt Mercer's version of that is, I bet.
Yeah. Because it is, yeah. I was about to say, well, Stranger Things did it, but Stranger Things and D&D have, it was a stupid thought that I had. They clearly have like a, yeah, sure, you can have the rights to this. Yeah. So I know that happens. And there's a character, or not a character, but an ally comes in to help fight. And I wonder if he'll be in it, because he's actually got a cool arc to that as well, that end fight. Yeah, it'll be very interesting. It'll be interesting to see if that's where they end it too. Not to say I want the show to end, but the pace that they're going at. And if they just do like the like next season's like that's episodes, it. Like 20 episodes, I feel like. And this hurts me as a fan to say it, but I feel like season four or five, I'll say that there should be at least that many seasons.
At the rate they're going, season four is going to be it.
Mm.
Yeah. Unless they slow the pace down like crazy in season four and just really drag out the ending, adapt more of the little moment. That's the only way I can see them going on. For five seasons.
Honestly, yeah. I think season four will probably be the last one, just because that's usually when animation show. No, it's a different kind of animation show, though. But, like, animation shows don't really have that many seasons. And I don't feel like Crunchyroll is not the type of company to drag out a storyline. You know what I mean? Yeah. But also, they'll have plenty of time to figure out what they're doing, because my theory and how the production of their shows is going. Like, season three just ended. I'm pretty sure Mighty Nein season one is next, because they released like a sneak peek preview of like an animatic that they did. Right. And then they'll do season four. That's my guess. Cause all it right. would, it, to me, it wouldn't make sense to pause Mighty Nein and then work and then just go straight to season four because of how hyped Mighty Nein fans would be. But I'm also not on that level of production, so I don't know how it would work out, but
Mighty Nein campaign 2 to this date is still their biggest campaign. That's the most popular, the most beloved all around. People have a big fan base of campaign 1 for sure, but campaign 2 is where Critical Role as a brand really took off. So I know they're probably going to be pushing Mighty Nein very hard.
Yeah.
That said, they're also probably setting it up as the replacement for Vox Machina. I just don't know if, like you said, they're going to do Mighty Nein and then Vox Machina season four, or if they're just getting Mighty Nein off the ground right now so they can end Vox Machina season four and then like skip forward down the timeline to Mighty Nein.
Yeah, it's very interesting to see what happens in the next, I want to say 6 months, in terms of announcements and what they'll do, because we don't really know. We don't have like a release schedule or anything, but it'll be very interesting to see what they do. I don't want them to rush anything. That's all I'll say. Like, I don't want them to rush Mighty Nein to work on Vox Machina, and I don't want them to rush Vox Machina in order for them to work back on Mighty Nein. And I know they wouldn't do that. Clearly, they took a longer break between season two. Well, here's the thing. When they got the show rights, they actually got season one and two. And then they got a little bit of time to do season three. So, obviously, they're not the type of business to just rush things to make a release date or keep up to a release date. I don't know. Maybe those big wigs at Amazon scare me. I don't know.
I don't know how much Amazon's really been on their, you know, on their backs about this show. I feel like they've
probably
been
none.
Relatively. I feel like Amazon in general, I respect them for having a pretty hands-off approach from the sounds of things. They seem to just like throwing money at stuff to experiment. They don't really
got the cash.
Prime is like their side video. Like if you buy, you know, a Prime account, you get Amazon Prime Video with it. Like they don't push Prime as its own thing. It's sort of there and they put money into it just for amusement, I guess. But they're not like Disney Plus or Netflix or whatever that's like, if this show doesn't do well, it's the end.
Yeah. Yeah, Amazon Prime, I think, weirdly enough, this is a weird thing to say, but like the lesser of evils in terms of streaming television shows. Yeah. Because
they're the most
television
artistic.
Shows will just last on there.
Yeah. They give things a try and they fund them.
Yeah.
For a couple years, usually.
At least like 2 to 3 seasons. I mean, The Boys is different because of how popular that show got. But even Rings of Power, I heard no positivity about season 1.
They gave it
but they still
shot.
Made a season 2. And
yeah.
Still no positivity about that. I bet there'll be a season 3. So
I've heard more positivity about season 2 than season
oh, really?
One.
Oh. To be fair, I only have one source. He's like, yeah, it's boring still, but it's pretty. It's pretty.
People
to look
say
at.
It's a little bit better from what I've heard, but
that's fine.
Anyway, yeah. So one thing I did want to mention also is just to note how long these voice actors have been working on these particular characters. Like, I'm sure they love Mighty Nein. You know, everyone loves Mighty Nein, but these voice actors have been playing these characters for about 10 years now. They had been playing them, you know, they played them all throughout Campaign 1 and for one-shots throughout the years, and then they got to do this whole animated show bringing characters back. But even before Campaign 1, they were running this campaign at home for a couple of years. So, like, just for sheer longevity, Critical Role have been playing Vox Machina characters more in depth for many, many years and in many kinds of media. Like, they played them casually at home. They played them for the streaming audience. They played them in the animated sphere. They've seen all the facets of these characters more than any of the other ones. So, like, that's why we haven't even really talked much about the voice acting and all on this show, because like, these people know what they're doing. First of all, they're professional voice actors, and they're, you know, they're pretty much excellent in everything I've ever seen them in. But with these characters specifically, like, these are their babies. They've created them from the ground up. They know what they're doing here in terms of how they're written and portrayed.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of what I was trying to allude to earlier, is that why I wasn't worried about whatever they do, because they're such high professionals in the entire field. I mean, I believe the writing team for a lot of season 1 and 2 was Travis and Sam. But even season 3, they brought on Liam to write an episode. They brought on Marisha to write an episode. I believe Marisha wrote the Cloak and Dagger one, Percy's Ooh. Death, which...
Yeah, well done.
I remember being... That's a well-written episode. These are all top of their game, professional, like, producers, actors, voice actors, story writers. And it's funny because it was a little bit crowdfunded, or it was crowdfunded, I should say, like the first couple seasons. And it's just all the people that they were like, that they have friends in the industry, but they're like huge names too. They're like, yeah, we'll do it. Yeah, why not? Sounds like fun.
Yeah.
And then they produce just such high quality because they all trust each other and they've all worked together for a decade plus. And it's just, it really is beautiful to see this like passion project, this little game that people played at home, and now it's this phenomenal television series that's gone on for 3 seasons, has picked up for 4, and they have another show coming out later on in next year or so.
You got to remember, all this started. If I recall the story correctly, all this started because Liam wanted to play D&D for his birthday 1 year, 10 years ago, and it became all this. Right? That's something special. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's phenomenal. See, D&D, I think it brings people together, people.
Yeah, 100%. So I think this is
good.
I got just a couple little notes I want to touch on. Doesn't have to be long, but I love Vax's flight and running animations. They're just so smooth. They're awesome. I was talking earlier about the lack of teamwork I felt in the big battles, because that hit me even harder because the small battles had such excellent moments of teamwork. I was talking earlier about multiple things are happening frame by frame. But one of my favorite aspects is seeing how Vox Machina work together and set each other up for like combos, like video game combos nearly. Just seeing them as a well-oiled unit, super satisfying. Percy always looks badass, glint on his glasses. It's just the animation's really cool there. I also think it's interesting what they do with the monsters, like the dragons and the Yank, and they are all animated differently. They all look distinctly different to me. I'm like, okay, so there's like normal people and then there's monsters. They feel weird and otherworldly. They just, whatever they do with the monsters is off-puttingly weird in a creative way, like intentional way.
To kind of jump in there, I think it's the obvious visual difference is that like the main characters and like all the NPCs are like 2D drawn, and then the big monsters and the dragon, they're all 3D animated with like some 2D shaders thrown on them. But I do like the way they do that as well. Yeah, kind of adds more of a threat level, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Or because of how differently they move, you're like, oh, this sucks. This is not going to be good.
This is something unnatural to this world compared to how everything else is. I also want to praise the dynamic colors, the color palette, especially during the fight scenes. I feel like something about the fight scenes, they add more depth or shading or something, just makes the fight scenes feel more gritty and real and focused.
Yeah, for sure. It's weird to say this about a animation show, but the color correction in each scene is very well done. That's what I wonder. Do they do color correcting, or is that just how it's drawn in animation? I gotta find that out. That'd be interesting.
They probably have to do some color correction at some point.
Probably later on.
You got to make it all consistent, right?
Here, let me email Matt Mercer real quick. And then maybe he'll let me know.
You have his personal email, or are you just emailing the Critical Role fan email?
I'm just emailing the support email for their store.
Matt Mercer, you're questioning about the Legend of Vox Machina?
If I emailed the support team about a question about the show, they're the type of company, I bet I would get an answer. I bet I would get an answer. Just like, well, here's how it's done.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I think Legend of Vox Machina Season 3 is must-see TV. Still, just as good. I mean, I got my issues with it. I feel like if I hadn't seen the original show, I'd be blissfully just like, wow, this is great. And I mean, I'd still have some issues with it, which I've gone over already, but I'm more in the mindset of like adaptation. They didn't do Bard's Lament.
They didn't do what I wanted.
Still must see TV.
Listen,
very well
handled. If you haven't seen the speech Bard's Lament, people out there, go watch it. It's a powerful improv performance by Sam Riegel, and you'll understand, okay?
I mean, there's a lot of setup to make it pay off, but it's still very well delivered, just on its own.
Yeah.
Great scene.
Yeah.
And imagine the season ending that way.
I do love the season. Even though I call the last batch of episodes more of an epilogue episodes, I do believe... Oh, this sucks. This is tough. Because I do like season two. I think this one... I think season three was a lot more, in terms of action, more entertaining. But in terms of that's tough. There's a lot of good character. This show's just good. it's weird. Like, I can't put a season over one season. It's just a good show. It's just overall great.
What I'll say about season two versus season three is that season two is a lot of setup, and season three is all the payoffs for season two's setup.
But season two has Grog's arc, so. I'm sorry, it's one of my favorite characters. I say that about every character. I'm like, this is one of my favorite characters. They're all great. Even Scanlan, who I hate the most, but he still has a good character arc.
Yeah. I'm a Percy and Vex person myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Percy specifically.
I think they talked about it. Like, they did an interview or whatever, and everyone... I think Percy's the most popular character of the show in terms of the fandom.
Or well, I mean, the whole... They made the whole first season about him.
That's true.
He's gotten a lot of...
He's got a great...
Yeah.
It's a great story arc.
He's got that steampunk aesthetic. He's got the deep issues with vengeance, and he's got that redemption arc. He's got... You know, I'm more of
great voice.
He's got a great voice. Personally, I'm more of a fan of Percy and Vex than Vax and Keyleth. I've always been more on their hype train as well. So I'm like, I like his romance story the best too. I like how he's like a super genius in certain aspects, and then he's like totally awkward and has no idea how to behave in others.
Yeah. I love Talos the way he speaks to his vocabulary is well done as well.
Yeah. And Taliesin coming in hot with the one-liners constantly. He's the master of the witty one-liner.
Mm-hmm. Percy's a great character. I would agree with you on the relationship thing, even though I'm a huge Vax and Keyleth fan.
They're drama. They're just drama.
Yeah, the Percy and... Vex stuff is so fun. It's so flirty, the way they talk to each other too. It has its own up and downs, but yeah, it's very drama with Vex and Keyleth. But yeah,
I just love them because Vex is so extroverted and flirtatious, and Percy is just like so awkward and doesn't know what to do with that.
Yeah,
but they work.
Very funny.
But he's also like. He's also way more secure about who he is as a person than she is. So he brings stability and security and makes her feel safe. And she sort of pushes him out of his comfort zone. They match so well.
Yeah, they have a great dynamic. Percy and Vex.
So let's get into my question of the week here. I want to know, do you think Vox Machina Season 4 is going to go even more off script than they already have in terms of being an adaptation? And should it? They've already deviated a lot. Season 3 has the most deviations so far. Are they going to keep going with that? Are they widening the gap between the original and Vox Machina on the show?
Right.
So are they going to continue to widen the gap or bring it in?
I think they will, and here's my weird reason why. It's because all the clips that I have seen of, like, Campaign 1, favorite moments, they've already happened in the show. So I feel like this next batch of whatever till the end, not to say nothing major happens. Obviously, there's major stuff that happens, but I feel like a lot of it is very much up in the air in terms of what they can do and how much they will, be faithful to that arc. But I I don't see why they wouldn't. I mean, it worked pretty well in season three with a few gripes, but I don't see why they wouldn't do it, especially with how well they did it. Will they completely change what happens? I don't know. I really don't know what happens. Like, I have no idea what happens after the Conclave.
Now, without spoiling as little as possible, because I don't know how much you know about going forward. I really don't know anything myself. But what I wonder is how they're going to handle Terry and Darrington. Because...
Yes.
I don't know if they're going to, like, make Terry in a major thing going forward. Because, once again, trying not to spoil things, but the way this season went... It doesn't seem like he's going to get much to do next year. I feel like what they're going to do is they're probably going to have him show up for like one episode. They're going to have Vox Machina meet Terry and Darrington, and he'll just be like a thorn in their side, like a bit joke for maybe one episode, and then he'll just be gone, and that'll be it. I don't see them adapting the full story with that character going forward. And I feel like that's going to be the biggest deviation. I don't think he's going to be there, really. It'd be a mistake to leave him out entirely, but.
Yeah, it'd be, especially with how Bard's Lament went. I don't see them having him be there, like, fully. Like, it's just interesting. I also don't know the timeline of how long he was in the campaign for.
That's what I'm saying. I don't really know either. I don't. Like, he's still in where I'm in, like, in the maybe, like, 10 episodes after Bard's Lament, nearly. I don't know how far he continues. He might be there till the end, for all I know. But.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I'm very interested to see what they do with season four, solely because I have no fucking idea what they're going to do besides the very end fight.
Yeah, I haven't listened to what they would be adapting yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if they deviated even more. Maybe, you know, killed off some characters that you maybe weren't supposed to die in the season. I'm like, it's the end of the, you know, Vox Machina. So maybe kill off some of the supporting characters if they, once again, they're doing that thing where...
Don't kill Gilmore.
From, like, Calamity and Mighty Nein and Bell's Hells, there are characters who have continued on. I don't know who's actually relevant, but if they're not that relevant, they might just kill them off at the end of season four just to have a gut punch. So I can easily see them doing that.
Yeah, for sure.
I might like to see them go off script. You've already widened the gap. Just keep going.
Yeah, as long as it's not, like completely changes how a character is, like, from what he is in the campaign in terms of, like, character assassination, then go for it.
Yeah.
Why not?
Don't character assassinate, but, you know. Mm-hmm. The trajectory's changed already. Just go with it.
Yeah. Overall, very happy with how the show was. Lived up to the hype for me. Even went farther. I don't know how. Especially with the action scenes. Yeah, I thought it was great. Loved every minute of it. It was very much what I looked forward to every Thursday, was watching the batch of episodes after work. So that was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was when I need to peer pressure you again to watch The Penguin, because that's like the best show on TV right now. And I need you to watch it. You don't need to come on the podcast to talk about it. Just in my life, I need you to watch this so I can talk to you about it.
There's literally nothing that is keeping me from watching it except me forgetting that it's on. Like, I don't know why. Like, people are watching it. My parents have talked about it. I am a fan of the universe. I'm a fan of Colin Farrell. I'm a fan of Matt Reeves. I don't know why I haven't started it. Like, I don't know why. There's not a good reason.
You'll be a big fan. You'll be an even bigger fan of Kristen Milioti at the end. Not even at the end. Like,
I am a fan of her. That's
holy hell, does she steal the show.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
She was great. Colin Farrell's up here, but when they're in scenes together, she steals scenes from him.
she was the best part of the final season of How I Met Your Mother. So
easily. I've liked her in everything she's been in, and now she's finally getting recognition. This is like her star-making role.
Hell yeah. Happy about that.
This is what she'll be remembered for.
It's funny because like a clip will pop up on social media of the penguin. I'm like, no, I don't want to see it. Like, I think the thing that I saw was like the penguin. This might be the opening scene of him shooting somebody. I'm like, no.
Yeah, that's scene one.
Okay. Well, that's not that big a deal, but yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. It's funny because like talking to my parents, especially my mom, she's like, how is all that makeup on him? Like he can just be in that all day. It's like, it's a lot of hours. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
That's commitment. Anyway, so that's been Legend of Vox Machina season 3. Where can we find you?
You can find me at Ryan Walker Official on YouTube, TikTok, and on Instagram.
And you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook at Thought Plane Media. Also, check out the Close Up with Ryan and Joe Facebook page for latest updates on the show. If you listen to us in audio, check out our YouTube channel. And if you're on YouTube, find us anywhere you get your favorite podcasts. We hope to see you on the next Close Up with Ryan and Joe, where I probably finally release the second half of that leisure list I did with Justin like a month ago. Hopefully, unless something else comes up. I don't know. Till next time, thanks for joining us, Ryan.
No problem. Take care.